Hello, ladies and gents. It's your boy, Marino Greco. We're doing a Big Shiny Takes thing, you know, the thing where we hate free speech podcast, where we mad at bad columnists who write bad things, Canadian media. I'm joined, as always, by Jeremy Appel. How are you, Jeremy?
Good. That was such an eloquent introduction. I just wanted to give you kudos.
Thank you.
I'm a lot richer for having heard it.
Yes, well, I try to keep our listeners informed, much like the national public radios and such. I'm also joined by Eric Wickham. Eric, how are you today?
Marino, I'm fantastic, and that introduction was also fantastic. Everything's fantastic.
I'm glad you're pleased.
Yeah, I can't see what anyone would be depressed about at this current moment.
There's literally nothing to be upset about.
Yeah. No, Joe Biden's the president now. Everything's fine.
Yeah. Brunch is back.
We all went back to brunch.
Yes. As you can hear, we are joined by a very special guest today. That is the original horse girl, of course, Elaine Pauls.
That's me. I like coming on this show because I'm just like some average nobody, like who is like just like tangential to like all of this media weird journalist shit that happens. So I like coming on because being like a nobody, being at the bottom, means I can say like such mean things about people because they're all above me. It's always punching up.
Yeah, and I would just note that Elaine was our first guest ever, and we got feedback. People liked you.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah,
really?
they said that you had spunk.
Oh god. It's like when my aunts fucking own me on Facebook, when my mom's like, she really marches to the beat of her own drum. She's just quirky. And it's like, that's a nice way of saying my child is obnoxious, really.
Yeah, no, actually no one said you had spunk. I just made that up right now because
thank yeah. God, because I would have to find that person and probably murder them.
They just said they thought you were good. Then I was like, oh, yeah, it's because she has spunk. So this is on me.
So it was you, Jeremy, and I know where you live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, shit.
I'm happy to be back. Thanks for having me back, guys. And why did you invite me back?
Well, we have kind of an Alberta-centric episode, and I feel like you might have a little bit of insight into this whole... I don't know if our listeners know, but things in Alberta are quite interesting these days. Have you read about
interesting
that?
Interesting is a yeah. good adjective.
Have you guys read about this? Have you guys hear of this province called Alberta?
Alberta, yeah.
But yeah, let's talk for a few minutes about like what's been going on in the news, right? Because we are a news podcast. So what's been happening since we last met our dear listeners? I think a lot has happened, particularly on the Alberta front. Jason Kenney, our premier, he kind of looks like Randy from the Trailer Park Boys.
Which anytime I see a comparison, I'm like, that is such a disservice to the assistant trailer park supervisor, Randy.
Yeah, I don't think Kenny makes a cheeseburger as well. But he's on the warpath. He's going sicko mode.
He really is.
John Wick style. Just, you guys hear, do you guys hear out east about the Keystone XL pipeline? Have you heard about this?
I hear
yeah,
everything's going great.
I have read and heard about this thing. Yeah, yeah. It's a pipeline to nowhere, which is a whole lot of fun. Yeah, so Joe Biden, in the first day of his presidency, announced that he had intention to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. And I like that you made the comparison to John Wick, because it like when Kenny went on Fox News to cry about it, reminded me of the time in John Wick where Keanu Reeves went on Fox News to complain about his dog being killed by those random mobsters.
That was my favorite part in the series, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it spoke to me.
He absolutely shreds Tucker Carlson. Like, he puts his face in a paper shredder. It's a deleted scene. You gotta get the Criterion cut of John Wick.
That won the Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a lot of other things have happened in the news. I feel like a slow purge of party caucuses. I mean, someone from the Liberal caucus was kicked out today, which is January 25th. However, there was a bit of more high-profile expulsion of a politician from the Conservative caucus, which is sort of the subject matter of this episode.
All right, well, this piece is in the National Post, of course, Canada's newspaper of record for very stupid people. And... and it's written by a guy named Derek Fildebrandt. And Elaine, I think you know a bit about Derek Fildebrandt. I think
you do, actually.
Yeah, you guys dated once or something?
Yeah, we totally dated. It's why he blocked me on Twitter.
It was a nasty breakup.
No, I never dated Derek. That's a joke, everybody. I want to say I got notoriety, but I didn't really get notoriety. Just a couple of people thought it was really funny that I was doing this thing, and so I kept on doing it, where Derek blocked me on Twitter years and years and years ago. I'm talking like 2015, when the Wild Rose was still a party in Alberta, and the Wild Rose marched in Pride, of all places. And so Derek was at the Wild Rose at the time. He's like a, like one of those, like, libertarian bro, white bros, you know, just kind of like millennial, pretty like, I think government should be small, not really like sophisticated opinions, honestly. And he served as an MLA in Strathmore for a number of years before the UCP was elected. He actually ended up going sicko mode against the UCP because Jason Kenney wanted to put him in a different riding than his actual riding, and Derek said no, so he ran independently and got totally decimated. But anyways, so Derek...
He was kicked out of the party.
Yeah, he got kicked out because he wanted to run in Strathmore, and Jason Kenney said, no, we need to have this... Because Jason Kenney... ran like a really strategic campaign. And so Jason Kenney said, no, we need this MLA here for whatever reason. You need to go to this other place to run. And then Derek said no.
Right. Okay. But there are a few pretexts. There are a few pretty big pretexts.
Yes. So Derek blocked me on Twitter years ago because I tweeted at him and the Wild Rose Party, hey, instead of marching in Pride, can you guys vote for legislation that actually helps queer people? And that got me a block. And that's the thing, is like, the thing I said was true, number one, and two, it wasn't even mean. So like, he had no reason to block me there. So I changed my Twitter name to Unblock Me Derek Fildebrandt, and I just started this campaign to get Derek to unblock me on Twitter. So like, I went to the women's march with a sign that said unblock me Derek, because obviously I thought he I would at least like see it instead of, you know, possibly being there or whatever. Yeah, and then people would ask him to unblock me on Twitter as well. He's kind of just fallen out of relevance, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, he's like the human equivalent of the Wild Rose Party.
I think it's worth noting with regards to Wild Rose marching in Pride that they are the Lake of Fire Party.
Yes.
In that they had a candidate who was like a pastor or something, and they gave this sermon about how homosexuals will burn in a lake of fire.
And I think that's this was also... the Gay Straight Alliance time, where gay straight alliances were like a hugely controversial thing in the province, where like people were saying that kids shouldn't be allowed to have protected like clubs, like a Gay Straight Alliance club. I don't know what the conservatives thought they were against, but like, it literally is just a bunch of kids like plain crazy eights. That's all a Gay Straight Alliance is. Like, you're not turning kids gay or trans or anything. guy, or at the very most, it's mostly just like kids who might be queer hanging out and being like, it's nice to talk to somebody who isn't going to openly harass me about my gender or sexuality.
I remember the first time I heard of the Wild Rose Party, and it was through Jeremy, and I'm just like, what the hell is this? And Jeremy was like explaining to me that, you know, it's like this right-wing populist party that no longer exists. It was like absorbed, right? Like it's gone now.
Yeah, it's basically Jason Kenney came back to Alberta to take control of the PCs who had been in the last election decimated by Wild Rose and NDP. And then he merged them with the Wild Rose. So it's like they're like the Alberta version of the Reform Party of the 90s, which Kenney, of course,
they're
was
like
a member.
Socially conservative, and they're a bunch of like stupid idiots. Like, I remember you explaining it to me, and you're like, yeah, it's great. One of their candidates has to apologize like every week for saying something racist at a campaign. Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And it just existed in Alberta for everybody outside of Alberta.
And so I think it's worth noting at this point that Derek Fildebrandt, who's a member of Wild Rose, was one of the biggest proponents of merging with the PCs. And he was, for a time, like a rising star in the UCP. Even after they merged, he was the finance critic. People were talking about him maybe running for the leadership. And then he had quite a week in August of 2017. So firstly, Derek Fildebrandt, who was once the Alberta director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, which is, you know, one of those like right-wing astroturf organizations that newspapers quote all the time because they think they're real. He got caught renting out his taxpayer-funded apartment in Edmonton for, you know, when he's there for the legislature on Airbnb.
That's just like that's like a fiscally good move, Jeremy. Like, it's there. Why is he not?
No,
doing
I mean
it?
The man's libertarian, right? Like that. Yes. Like when you look at it from a libertarian perspective, it's like, well, I shouldn't be getting taxpayer subsidized living, but I am, so might as well make some money off of it. You know, it's like you have to at least admire his courage of his convictions, right? Like that's not inconsistent. Nor is, shortly after this, news came out that in 2016, he was charged with a hit and run.
Oh my God.
Now, to be clear, it wasn't, he didn't like hit a person or something, right? He like backed into someone's vehicle and drove away. I've done that. But I'm not a libertarian.
Don't admit to hit and runs on the podcast, Jeremy. It's a bad idea.
No. I was convicted of it. I paid the fine, did a number on my auto insurance.
I love how the hierarchy is. Yeah, I've done a hit and run, but I'm not a libertarian.
Yeah, it's less cool when I do it, is the point. But and then and then finally to complete the trifecta, in December of 2017, he was charged with illegal deer killing on private land. He was like poaching.
That fucking rules.
But again, the man's libertarian. Like what? Like he wouldn't.
He works for the government.
Yeah.
But like, if he were in charge, none of this shit would be illegal, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, you gotta give him points for consistency. Anyways,
is that really how like libertarian mindset works? It's just like nothing is illegal, basically.
Yeah, no one can tell me what to do, basically.
Yeah.
But like they'll like have to rent their house from McDonald's or something, right? Like,
yeah, some mega corporation will own everything. There's actually a great article in the New Republic about a libertarian utopia that fell apart because there's no municipal workers keeping wildlife out of the town, so the town was overrun by bears.
Amazing. That rules so hard.
It's just like such a good case study to why government is necessary, because bears.
Oh, that's funny.
But then, so in February of 2018, Derek Fildebrandt gets booted from the party. And Calgary Herald did a story on it, of course. And let me read this paragraph to you from their piece. Fildebrandt did not respond to a request for an interview, but later tweeted, "Revolution devours its own children."
What?
Granted, I think this was also at the time where he made some comments where he's like, "I've spent the last day sitting in my chair and drinking whiskey," or some shit like that.
What a nerd. I'm sorry. That's so funny.
Very, very melodramatic. Oh, yeah.
So, Elaine, did Derek Fildebrandt unblock you after your campaign?
Yeah, actually, a friend of mine who actually has a verified account, and when you have a verified account on Twitter, you will always get a notification that, like, someone replied to you or something like that. Like, you have, like, you get seen more, essentially. So a friend of mine who has a verified account said, "Hey, can you unblock my friend?" And then Derek said, "You know, I think I believe in second chances. I'll unblock her." And yeah, so he got blocked immediately by me.
Yeah. No, Derek Fildebrandt, that guy's, he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's a serious person.
Yeah. Very serious person, and he's written a very serious op-ed in a very serious newspaper. Tell us a bit.
The National Post has been on a roll this year, man. Like, I've seen some wild ass shit published in it.
Like, the bar is so low, and they scrape under it consistently.
Every time.
Lowering the bar all the time, and like, we go from, like, one serious person talking about another very serious person in Derek Sloan, who, let's use the word interesting again, because, like, I'm just using that as a replacement for the word bad today.
Derek wrote this piece, right?
Yeah.
Fildebrandt? Yeah.
Derek Fildebrandt wrote this piece about Sloan and Fromm, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I like Sloan a lot. I think they have a lot of great songs and albums, but I don't understand what their association to Paul Fromm is. So tell me, and also, what's your favorite Sloan album?
I can't name a single Sloan album, Jeremy. Look at me. I'm 31 years old. I'm a girl. Of course I'm not going to know any Sloan albums.
What? Sloan's for the ladies.
My favorite Sloan.
What's the song they sang? Also, I'd like, they're like a guitar band, right? Yeah, I like beep boop music, so there you go.
Yeah, they do The Other Man. You know that song?
Great song.
No idea.
Money City Maniacs, that's probably their most famous. The one that's like,
no.
Do, yeah, do, the good
do,
and every-
do, 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 do.
Everything You've Done Wrong and The Good and Everyone are great songs.
So you're a one chord to another guy.
I can live with that. I can live with Twice Removed. It's all good. I also like beep boop music. Vaporwave turned up on my Spotify Wrapped up this year, and it made me embarrassed.
I was just about to say, like, all I'm listening to now is just, like, SoundCloud anime future funk, and that's it.
You should change it up with some Sloan.
I'll hit you up, Eric.
Thanks.
Sadly, Derek Fildebrandt is writing about neither the alternative rock band Sloan nor Vaporwave. He is in fact writing about Derek Sloan, a former conservative MP who is now sitting as an independent after some shiz went down. Do people want to know more about this? Should I play?
Not really.
Please. No. Please tell me. Why, oh, why would you ever get removed from the party?
Yeah, well, that's the thing right off the bat, right? There's clearly, like, Fildebrandt sees himself in Derek Sloan a little. Besides the fact that they're both named Derek.
He sees Derek Sloan as a bit of a maverick, much like
Yeah, exactly.
So Derek Sloan, sort of a rising star of the Conservative Party, sought nomination for the ridings of Hastings, Lennox, and Addington, which is a Ontario, like, country
it's
riding.
Fucking nowhere.
I have
so
family there, actually.
They live in the middle of fucking nowhere.
He's an MP, isn't he?
Yeah, he is an MP.
Like, he sits in Parliament.
He won in 2019. beat the liberal incumbent there.
So it's not just Alberta. It's not just us, okay?
Oh, yeah.
It's all across the country.
Oh, man. Rural Ontario? You might as well be in Alberta.
Yeah. Ontario is Alberta with the CN Tower. Like, if we're going to be honest. It's, and worse real estate. Derek Sloan reminds me a lot of people that I went to high school with, in that I don't like him. but can someone else talk about some of Derek Sloan's highlights in his time in the Conservative caucus before he was kicked out?
Yeah, but I just want to say first that a friend of the show, Alex of House in Decline, who wrote our theme music, went to law school with Derek Sloan. I just remembered that now.
God, this guy went to fucking law school. Are you joking me? This pisses me off so much. Like, these people are supposed, like, they believe in things like meritocracy and, like, pulling yourself up for the bootstraps. And they just, like, fail upwards through these institutions. Like, he went to law school and now he's a sitting MP. And my boy is still, like, a libertarian, right? Like, what the fuck?
Well no, I wouldn't say Derek Sloan is a libertarian. Tell us, Marino, what are some of the sort of the highlights of his short political career?
Oh, yeah.
He ran for the leadership, didn't he?
He did.
And came in dead last.
He did, relatively, because he was only elected in the 2019 federal election, first time sitting MP. But he quickly kind of gained a name for himself as a bit of a social conservative darling. And when he first announced his candidacy, he got in sort of like this little Twitter spat with another candidate where he talked about being gay as a choice and his vow to vote against a federal ban of conversion therapy. And then after losing the Conservative Party leadership, he made some comments about Theresa Tam working for like China or something, basically being like a traitor to Canada. So
he's really like cool with other races too, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, he's very pro miscegnation.
Oh no. Oh god.
But what was the straw that broke the camel's back, you may ask? Why is he now expelled from the generating such a rap sheet, why has he finally been expelled from the Conservative Party? Little Nazi money.
Yeah,
it's fine.
He accepted a donation of Nazi gold.
It's like the movie Inside Man with Clive Owen, that's his name, where there's the diamonds inside of the bank that he's trying to get, but no one can tell them that there's diamonds because they're from like Nazi Germany.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. If you guys weren't paying attention to the news, Derek Sloan accepted a donation from a fairly prominent Canadian neo-Nazi. His name is Paul Fromm. And Derek's big defense of this entire thing was, I had no idea who he was.
Never heard of him.
he used a different name slightly, like different first name in the donation.
My question is, if you're a candidate in a party and someone donates to you, you can just reject that money, right? Like, you can say, like, no, thank you and give it back. Like, like you don't have to accept everything that's given to you or anything.
Yeah, you don't have to. And I'm wondering if Paul Fromm delivered him a bar of Nazi gold. Because then there's no excuse for that. And you know, it's possible. I mean, these guys are all like obsessed with the gold standard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, I don't want to, you know, spoil the ending too much, but I mean, Derek Sloan's defense was that Paul Fromm, like, he had no idea who he was. However, when Kelly Leach was running for the leader of the Conservative Party, Paul Fromm tried to join the federal party, and the campaign manager for Kelly Leach wrote back to him rejecting his membership application.
I see.
Was that Nick Kouvalis?
I don't remember who her her campaign manager is. And when I say I don't remember, I mean I didn't write it down in my notes over here. And then because
that's the guy who got fired from her campaign for calling someone a cuck on Twitter.
I remember
the old Max Fawcett treatment.
Okay, come on, seriously.
Yeah, like honestly, I think that he should have gotten a promotion.
I agree. I fully agree.
But then you know, in 2018 again, Tanya Granick Allen received an endorsement from Paul Fromm. And when the Toronto Star reached out for comment, Tanya Granick Allen didn't respond. But then later on social media, she emphatically rejected this endorsement. So I think it's an unfair claim to make that Derek Sloan had no idea who this person was. If other Conservative Party MPs and leadership candidates very clearly knew who Paul Fromm was. And he's been on the radar for, what, the last 30 years?
Maybe Derek Sloan is trying to push the dial a bit. Like, there's a clear line that the Conservatives won't cross when it comes to, like, what they fundamentally believe in, which, you know, I'm not going to say all Conservatives are intentionally, like, purposefully racist. Obviously, they aren't. Like, they're not going to say slurs or things like that, but they have politics that support systemic racism. Mm. So, like, it isn't necessarily against their interests. Michelle Rempel talks about, like, immigration and shit like that all the time, right? Mm. And so there is, like, this line, and apparently now for Derek Sloan, because he hasn't apologized, right? And he hasn't, like, rejected Paul Fromm's endorsement. So he's, like, clearly chill with it.
Yeah, like, I've never heard of this guy. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm going to keep his money. And also, though, he did have an interesting point, didn't he, in response to this controversy?
Well, wasn't his response the Conservative Party took their cut of the donation as well?
Yeah. And how much was the donation again? Wasn't it like $140?
Something like
and
that.
The Conservative Party took 10%.
They took 13 bucks.
Wow.
It's like two meatball subs. Unbelievable.
where are you getting your meatball subs?
Adamson's Barbecue, probably.
Yeah, you know.
Subway.
That's right. Paul Fromm was hanging out at Adamson's Barbecue, right? That place that wouldn't shut down for indoor dining.
What do these fucking people do when they hang out? Like, they are all miserable and hateful. Like, what do they talk about? Like, how can you have fun at that kind of in that kind of an environment?
From the photos I saw of Paul Fromm at the Adamson Barbecue protest, if you can call it a protest, he was leering and wearing a trench coat and shaking hands with people, and that seems like fun for him because he gets to pretend that it's a big deal in this like weird white supremacist world. I'd love to tell you guys more about Paul Fromm if I could.
Please do, yes. Please.
Okay, so right off the top, he is a piece of shit Nazi from my hometown of Mississauga, Ontario, which, for those of you who don't live in the GTA, is the largest suburb of Toronto. It's houses. It used to be fields. Now it's just subdivisions everywhere. He was a teacher. He was fired for being racist.
Oh, good. Yeah. He was a teacher.
Good. And he taught at Applewood Heights. So Applewood, for those not well-versed in Mississauga history, was also home to Colonel Sanders for a number of years.
Wait, I didn't know he lived in Canada.
What?
Yeah, because he sold... So, this is like Mississauga history now, but I'm going to turn this into a Colonel Sanders history podcast eventually, which is like my long con. Colonel Sanders sold his interests in the Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises in the States, but he held on to everything in Canada. So he moved to Mississauga. He lived in Applewood for a number of years until his death. And
he retired to Mississauga, Ontario?
Ontario, home of Paul Fromm. So back to Paul Fromm.
Jesus.
Yeah, so
that is bleak.
Yeah, so like, I mean, Paul Fromm is like a really, really rotten person. He's been quoted as saying, you know, I wake up in the morning and I feel great. I'm high on hate, which rhymes, but is also like a shitty thing to say. He's made a habit of popping up wherever there's an election and then running as some ostensibly like racism party, like his platform is just being racist, and then he loses horribly, which is a lot of fun. So in 2010, in this campaign that he had for the mayoral race in Mississauga, he had like Holocaust denial literature at his campaign desk. He's like honestly just like a massive piece of garbage. He was at the Adamson barbecue.
Who has the energy? Just God damn it, man. You could just not do that. And then, you know, pick up a hobby, make some friends. Like there's a million ways to meet
organize
people that
your
is
workplace.
Not like...
Yeah.
Actually, exactly. Wait, maybe don't organize your workplace if you're a Nazi.
He'd be a horrible organizer anyways, so...
Yeah, so, like, he's an awful person, and I guess my second point was that he's been on the radar of everyone in conservative politics for a very long time. Otherwise, this would have been a news story quite a while ago, as he seems to always try and get in with whoever's socially conservative and running at the time.
Right, and they all seem to reject him when it comes to light, conveniently, except for Derek Sloan, which really makes you wonder.
With Phil DeBrand, in this article that he wrote about him, he was like sympathetic to Sloan.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like
Derek's got to stay together.
Yeah, Derek. Shitty Derek's.
Yeah, you know what precedent that sets if two Derek's turn on each other. Two Mavericks
can't have that.
We should probably get into this piece at some point, eh? Like this is a. I feel like we've done more background than we've ever done on an episode before.
Okay, everybody, ready?
Ready?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to read the article. I haven't read it before. This will be the first time. Title is Derek Fildebrandt, Derek Sloan's Exile Over $131 from a White Supremacist Doesn't Add Up. Coming in strong, Derek. Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole wants his... Yeah, it does say leader... Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole. Tools like the apostrophe S.
There's a typo in the first sentence in the lead of this article or this column, which
yeah,
man, Matt Gurney leaves and the National Post just goes to hell in a
higher copy.
You know,
please.
I just want to remind all of the listeners and also you guys that pretty much everybody who is involved in publishing this is probably paid more than me. And I think about that all the time.
They're probably paid more than what we all make put together.
Maybe not Phil DeBrandt because he's kind of an independent with the Western.
Oh, yeah, the Western Standard. That is worth pointing out that. So Ezra Levant's The Western Standard, which fortunately went tits up in the early 2000s, and Matt Good got into a Twitter fight with Ezra Levant because he said that this is great and it will at the very least save some trees. Derek Fildebrandt started it back up, I think, after he lost in 2019 because he ran as an independent.
Yeah, that's correct.
Now he's a Wexit guy. I feel like that's worth noting too. He's like straight up a Wexit guy.
We have to start recirculating that picture of Maxime Bernier and Derek Fildebrand with known communist reporter Stephen Maguziak from Press Progress. Start that scandal up again. God, I love drama. Okay, let's keep going. Yeah. I made it not even the first sentence. Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole wants his MPs to kick Derek Sloan out of caucus for accepting a donation to his leadership campaign for $131 from a white supremacist. Whatever one thinks of Sloan, something doesn't add up here. Oh, here we go. Far left propaganda website Press Progress said that they have proof that Sloan accepted the donation from a man named Paul Fromm.
I feel like we should take some time to, first of all, congratulate far left propaganda website Press Progress for the impactful journalism that they do. I'm familiar with a couple people that either work for Press Progress or the Broadbent Institute, which then funds Press Progress. But the work that Press Progress does is more impactful than like literally, what, like every other corporate establishment news source.
The reason that it's impactful is because it's so obvious that all of post media leans right and there is almost no left voice in the country. Mm-hmm. So when left journalism actually happens, people are like, holy shit, I've never seen anything like this before, right?
And also, like, the hypocrisy of a politician who's writing something that clearly has not been edited in a national newspaper to call actual journalism propaganda is...
Yeah, it's so funny.
It's pretty rich, you know?
Yeah, the thing is, Press Progress openly admits that they are, like, left-leaning and that they challenge power. But the strength of Press Progress is that they back their shit up and actually do their fucking research, right? So that's why they can stand on 2 feet and go up against, like, the big dogs, essentially.
I just love the fear. I love the fear in the way he typed it. Far left propaganda website, Press Progress, which isn't an issue at all and totally...
Yeah, he's very not mad. But also, it's interesting that is he suggesting that the reporting was inaccurate?
Oh no, you wouldn't do that.
That's a good question. Yeah.
And also, this is a guy who literally runs a far right propaganda outlet. And yeah. Like, not the National Post, which is also a far right propaganda outlet, but the Western Standard, of course.
Should I continue?
Yeah, jump back in there.
Okay, who is Paul Fromm? Until last night, I and probably 98% of Canada had never heard of the guy. Turns out he's a particularly loathsome white supremacist.
Turns out, like, little did I know.
This is such a classic, like, conservative talking point when they've been caught being in bed with the far right. Just being like, what? I'd never heard of the guy. How am I supposed to know?
It's an appeal to the ignorance of the National Post audience, right? Like, no offense to the National Post readers. I don't know if they would know who Paul Fromm was unless they were at a meeting that Paul Fromm was also at. You know what I mean? Like, because most of the people that are reading the National Post are, they don't have too many winters left, and they're not reading stuff online.
Where is the National Post popular in the country? Because I don't think it's very popular here.
Nowhere.
Senior homes.
Wow.
Yeah. No, the Herald and the Sun are owned by Post Media and publish Post Media drivel. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, hardly anyone chooses to read the National Post.
The hit piece was complete with lots of colorful pictures from Fromm doing his best impression of a Nuremberg rally. The intention was clearly to link Fromm with Sloan. Like, the thing is, like, he's, like, trying to say that, like, there's no evidence, and it's like, bro, they have, like, literally a receipt of, like, him donating to his campaign. Like, there's no question over whether or not that this guy supports this guy and he accepted that support.
Well, it's also what he's doing is like a slippery lawyer tactic where it's like, my client didn't do this. Okay, maybe he did this, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I do like the intention was to clearly link Fromm with Sloan with empirical evidence documenting the connection. Yeah. Like, it just, like, the rest of that sentence, I just feel like was deleted. And again,
yeah.
I mean, the history with the Conservative Party as well, like, Paul Fromm is a known quantity in those circles. And so pretending that he's not, I mean, calling it disingenuous is the nice way of putting it, but it's a lie. It's untruthful.
O'Toole tweeted furiously. Derek Sloan's acceptance of a donation from a well-known white supremacist is far worse than a gross error of judgment or failure of due diligence. That's right. Wait, what? He should just be like, this person is a Nazi, and that's wrong. Anyways, continuing. Conservative MPs tell me that they all learned about it in the press. Now, you don't need to be on Team Sloan to see that someone has been tossed under the bus without any kind of due process.
What due process? It's not a criminal. He's not being charged criminally. He's just being kicked out of a political party because they don't like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sorry, but politics literally sometimes is just the court of public opinion. And so you have to take into consideration when it optics and shit like that. So if I was a conservative, which I'm not, and I was like leading this party, I 100% would say we need to remove this person just because I want to win, right? Like keeping this guy on is a huge liability.
Yeah. Just to go back to O'Toole's tweet, first of all, his furious tweet had less typos than the first sentence of this article, but also the phrase "well-known white supremacist" in it is very telling. If it's grounds for dismissal in the Conservative Party, which has a very, very low bar for what they consider like appropriate behavior for human
beings.
Bro,
they're openly running a eugenics campaign right now that is based on not giving prisoners vaccines because, like, they don't deserve it or whatever. Yeah. Like, the bar is insanely low.
This is the guy who tweeted this furiously is the guy who also said, like, you know, residential schools, you know, you got to take the good with the bad. You know, like,
which Senator Lynn Byak, speaking of which, just resigned today.
Yeah, rest in
peace.
Retire,
bitch, is all I have to say.
Yeah.
Okay, we're in the part of the article where Derek Fildebrand is going to lay out all of the evidence, and I'm sure I will totally be convinced after all of this. Okay, one, almost no candidate is aware of every or even most of the donations that they receive. It is processed by the campaign's chief financial officer. For small campaigns like Sloan's, that position is often a volunteer, or at the least, not a professional, unless the donation was labeled Sierra Leone Blood Diamond Corporation. I wouldn't have taken a second glance at it.
Yeah. No.
This cannot possibly be true, right? Like, the conservatives have an enormous amount of resources behind them that he would have, like, a professional campaign organizer, right?
100%.
Yes, but also, Derek Fildebrand means to tell us that he wouldn't accept a donation that was clearly labeled as being from Sierra Leone Blood Diamonds. What kind of libertarian is that?
It's the free market. Yeah.
It just came your way.
They're just making a living, right? Like, shouldn't they be allowed to do that?
Yeah, but even like, whatever, there's no society. There's only individuals. So it's like, this transaction, like, someone's giving me money. Why would I turn it down? Why would I, like, I benefit from that transaction?
In fairness to Derek, he says that he wouldn't have taken a second glance at it. So, like, he'd probably still take the money. He just would have looked at it twice.
Two, no candidate is aware of the details of donations the size of Paul Fromm's, $131. Is that a significant number, by the way? Like, 88 or,
no,
like,
no, no,
14?
No, no.
Yeah, okay.
Yo, know, I was surprised he didn't donate, like, $140 and then $14.
Yeah, 1488 or anything.
That's probably just like the amount of the CPP check that he has for spending money that week.
No candidate is aware of the details of donations the size of Paul Fromm's, $131. It's a rounding error. I only ever ran to be an Alberta MLA in my time in politics, and I did not know who was giving me $131. I knew if someone was giving me $1,000, maybe even $500, never ever $131.
Derek Fildebrand frantically going through his past small donations.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past them to not even do that, Jeremy. Like, they are lazy, right? So, like, he probably has accepted money that has, like, been extremely sketchy in the past.
100%. But also, like, why is he so hung up on the numbers? Like, this just feels like a filler argument.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he's grasping.
And it's like, that's number two. There's, like, another three things that he needs to fill space with.
Oh, the number three is so good. Three, It's just a repeat. Number three, I have never heard of Paul Fromm before. You probably have never heard of Paul Fromm either. I'm doubtful that Aaron O'Toole had heard of him before the press progress piece.
This is hilariously lazy.
Yeah. I actually think that this is Derek. Like, he's kind of telling on himself here, and I don't think he realizes it. Like, he is really fallen out of relevancy, and so he's not going to know about things like this because, like, he's not really in politics anymore. He's like lower than the rebel for, like, people who read his shit and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, lots of people read and watch The Rebel. So that's a pretty high bar. But yeah, I mean, no one fucking reads the Western Standard. I mean,
yeah, totally. Like who does he have on there? Like Corey Morgan?
Does
Come
he?
On.
I know. I thought Dave Naylor is their like news guy.
All right. What's argument four?
Four. Paul Fromm's big 131 donation was processed not just by the Sloan campaign, but by the Conservative Party of Canada itself. Had the CPC recognized the name, they would have flagged it. They didn't. They do apparently accept Derek Sloan's CFO too, however. If that's true, that might actually be an okay argument that, like, we should also hold the CPC into account over this. And I mean, they kind of did by removing this MP from caucus. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Five, if the Conservative Party of Canada, with its legendary resources, could not flag this $131 in donation, then it is not reasonable to expect a fourth place also ran campaign to have the resources to do it.
Why is it?
I mean, I agree with that. Like, the problem isn't Derek Sloan. It's why is Paul Fromm seeing it as in his interest to donate to a Conservative candidate, right? Like, forget Derek Sloan. He's a fucking loser who, like, has a whole litany of terrible positions. But I'm more interested. I think that really got glossed over, that actually the Conservative Party got 10%.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. And they should, like, clearly Paul Fromm's donations have been rejected before in the past, too. So it isn't, like, totally unprecedented for them to set up some kind of system to be like, okay, here are the really notable racists that we can't really be seen aligning with or whatever. So that is a good. The last two points that Derek made, although he's not really making them, he's making them to, like, defend this, but, like, he's sort of also making a point to kind of our side at the same time.
Yeah, he makes he makes good specific points while missing the larger good point that it's
exactly.
We shouldn't be tolerating anyone with these views here at all. So he's like, somehow he's gotten to the next step there while somehow also still defending Derek Sloan, which is weird.
If his point alone was, if Derek Sloan is culpable, then the Conservative Party of Canada is also culpable, I would wholeheartedly agree with it. But instead, it's like, well, the Conservative Party didn't notice this, so actually Derek Sloan is fine. And, like, that's...
Yeah, his point is just basically, like, why are you guys so upset about this? This isn't a big deal.
I don't even know this guy.
but again, I think that Derek Vildebrandt sees himself in Derek Sloan.
Oh.
So he's a guy who feels like he was just thrown under the bus by his party and didn't really do anything wrong. And to the extent he did, his party was fine with it until it came out. And so he's, I think, extrapolating, as I would too, to the federal Conservatives and Derek Sloan.
Yeah.
Like, right? I mean, they were both victims of cancel culture. is what I'm
what we
to
have
say.
Here, what we have here is one man recognizing another man's Joker moment.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a very good point because, like, Vildebrandt's, what was Vildebrandt's Joker moment?
When he got removed from the party.
Yeah.
Like the UCP, like that, he was mad about that. Like, he wrote this whole piece and everything, and, you know, that's when he got jokerfied.
Yeah. So it's exactly the same. Like that. That was whereas like a guy like Maxime Bernier, he was clearly Joker-fied when he lost the leadership race in 2017.
Yes.
And that's what pushed him over the edge. But like,
he's so funny. Sorry, I just like enjoy Maxime Bernier.
He is. I have a Maxime Bernier poster from when he was in Medicine Hat. It's really funny. I look at it all the time when I'm like really high, and just there's like a pamphlet with it too, like in like a Duotang that I have. And he just talks about like free enterprise and like preserving the white race. It's so fucking cool.
He's like a less charismatic John Kay. Lane, do you want to take us back in?
Yeah, let's keep. We're getting we're
less
getting
charismatic.
There.
John Kay is not a phrase I thought I would ever hear. Yeah,
all right. So, according to a statement Sloan posted online, Fromm had joined the Conservative Party under the name Frederick P. Fromm and had voted in the leadership election. His ballot was accepted by the party without the scrutineers from the other campaigns objecting. Therefore, the party and the O'Toole campaign failed to uphold the same standard to which that they are now applying to me, he wrote. Sloan is not a centrist Tory in the mold of O'Toole and has a reputation as a bit of a maverick.
There we go.
Totally right, Jeremy. Leaders do not like mavericks in their caucus. Jeremy, you hit the nail on the head. This is about Derek Philibrand. It is not
of course.
About Derek Sloan.
You think he gives a shit about Derek Sloan?
No, yeah. Of course not. Yeah, he's just like, another Derek has fallen on the sword of cancel culture. This cannot happen.
It's just, it would have been, that's the end, right?
No, it's got, here, I'll power through. It's got a few more paragraphs. And Sloan is the only rival that O'Toole faced for the conservative leadership that currently has a seat in the House of Commons. Social conservative standard bearers are common in leadership races, but not in the Tory caucuses. It is convenient for O'Toole to have an excuse, even a paper-thin one, to be rid of Sloan.
Like,
incredible sentence right there.
Paper-thin, like...
Being supported by like a notable Nazi in the country is a paper-thin excuse to get rid of somebody.
Wild. No period at the end of the sentence, too.
Correct. Yeah. Wow, there are a lot of errors in this.
So good.
One veteran conservative with inside knowledge of the matter says that several MPs intended to vote against O'Toole's demand to expel Sloan if they get a secret ballot.
There's an ellipsis in the sentence. Sorry, this is grammar.
Yeah, the ellipses there. The Reform Act legally requires that they do, but ways can be found around such things. And even if his caucus showed some spine, O'Toole has unilaterally declared that Sloan will not be allowed to seek the CPC nomination in his constituency again, even if his local members want him. From the MPs I have spoken to, at least, the Conservative caucus is bitterly divided, and they tell me that they are afraid that O'Toole will come for them next. For what? Oh my god.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a legitimate question.
In other words,
though,
he knows a lot of Nazi adjacent people.
I shot at a girl wearing one of those pink pussy hats, and they did not, and they kicked me out of the party, and that's cancel culture right there. This is quickly backfiring on Toole. He does not have the political capital that Ontario Premier Doug Ford and Alberta Premier Jason Kenney do in their respective Confederate fiefdoms. It's interesting actually that he does mention that, because there is like a lot of speculation that Jason Kenney was not doing like more to lock down the province strictly because he's afraid of the party fracturing, because there is like a weird notable amount of people who are anti-mask, anti-vax marching around in the province, and Jason Kenney has those in his party. Like, he needs them as a segment to win. They're actually quite a big percentage of them. So it's interesting that Phil DeBrant did mention that. Dividing the caucus and the party's rank and file 8 months before a possible election is an unforced error. What could O'Toole possibly be thinking? And that's the end.
It's crazy that splitting the caucus is a bigger issue to Phil DeBrandt than taking money from a person that wants an
ethnostate. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But that's interesting, isn't it? That something like that could split the caucus. I mean, what does that tell you about the caucus?
I mean, it's kind of happening in Alberta too, where we see like real big Wexit heads like Drew Barnes and whoever that like wild, what's her name? The Banff MLA blonde lady,
Miranda Rosin.
The thing is, like, they've made their bed with these crazy people. Like, you have to kind of either do what O'Toole did and start to distance yourself from them and lose power, or at some point you're going to have to fully like find some kind of acceptance there.
I feel like this column is like unintentionally a deep condemnation of the people that make up the Conservative Party in this country. Like it didn't mean to be, but it's just like everything that Phil DeBrandt said was just like, oh, these are bad people. They have no intention of running the country very well. And they seem to get a little cozy with the ideas of white supremacists.
This is the beauty of the fail upwards, like, in action. Like he has all the parts. Like, he recognizes the data and stuff. And it goes through, like, the logic center. But it gets stitched together all wacky. But it still looks enough like Phil DeBrandt knows what's going on, when in reality he's just like so close to getting it.
Yeah,
it's astounding, really.
Yeah, it's incredible that like Derek actually still even can have a voice and like publish something in the National Post, honestly, because like this article is extremely stupid.
Yeah, it's probably the worst one we've read this year, though, of the other two that we read.
Yeah, I don't know how it failed to reach the National Post's incredibly rigorous editorial standards. It's like, this kind of seems like a bit of a fuck up for them. Like, you know, they always publish things that maybe you agree with it, maybe you don't, but it's well thought out.
But this is a listicle that has like basic syntactical errors throughout thing.
Yeah, like BuzzFeed would never publish this shit.
No, because like you actually have to like be like a functioning human being with like an adult brain to like write for them, even if it's about like the 17 ice cream flavors that they want to have on the moon or whatever. Like, this is such a dumb piece, and I know I'm not supposed to say that just like outright, but this is like, it's a condemnation of the Conservative Party, the National Post, and Derek Fildebrandt's basic ability to reason, I think.
Yeah, no, but by the way, I was joking about them always publishing stuff that,
yeah,
whether you agree or not, it's well thought out.
Yeah, no, we
just so that's clear. Well, National Post also, they published a huge scoop this week, Eric. Is that right? You were telling me about this.
Yeah. If we're going into recommendations, Barbara Kay, one of the oldest veteran columnists to grace the National Post.
The infamous case.
She never misses, really. In her entire career, I don't know if she's ever had something that wasn't laughable. She got on the front page, and I found out because her son was tweeting very proudly about it. But, I mean, it was one of those columns that just kind of, like, fell with a thud, even though, like, Barbara thought it was, like, this huge scoop about Jessica Mulrooney. And of course, the topic was cancel culture.
Yeah, well, I saw John Kay tweeting about his mom's huge scoop. And I was like, okay, this is going to be hilarious. And I click it to read on it. And I get past the first section. And I'm like, holy shit, this is like 2,000 words. I don't have fucking time for this. I don't care about Jessica Mulrooney and her text messages with some. I guess what she's saying is that she obtained text messages from Jessica Mulrooney that shows she's not a racist. In that, and it's just like, I don't know. Like, I don't really care. Like, okay, cool. She's not a racist. Like,
front page, like, news.
This is groundbreaking stuff. This is
unreal.
Yeah. So Barbara Kay was a little bit upset with the lack of response for her big scoop that none of the major media outlets had been covering, because she's like kind of like a counterculture icon in her own.
Sorry, did you say the piece was like 3,000 words or something?
It was long as fuck. I didn't do massive. A word count, but
like, what is wrong with these people? Like, do they not understand that, like, there is actual hard evidence that most people don't even read past a headline, let alone, like, the rest of the article? And how up your own ass do you have to be to write, like, a long piece like that and then be like, everyone will read this. I guarantee it.
Oh, can I read the headline?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, no, it's not a headline. It's a lead. This is like an amazing lead.
Yeah.
Like, it was just all boring after this lead. Cancel culture is pandemic today, but the virus was already in patchy play 30 years ago.
What the fuck does that mean?
Well, you'll have to read.
Failed poets.
She is truly the dimmest bulb in like Canadian news commentary. Like, she's never had.
That's saying a lot, too, because like, Canadian like everyone who is doing good journalism in the country doesn't work for like Post Media or anything like that, and like the people who are just like routinely shuffled through all the major publications are like so unbelievably mediocre and bad, and they're all paid more than all of us, and it makes me so mad.
There are a lot of good reporters at Post Media papers, like David Pugliese at the Ottawa Citizen, you know, Sammy Hootes at the Herald, Lauren Boothby at the Journal, but they're the ones who have to deal with the consequences of their newspaper chain being the joke that it is because of shit that we just read from Fildebrandt or, you know, anything one of the K's writes.
Yeah, well, I think the worst part
or
of
tweets.
The K's existing, because this industry is failing every day, there's less money at one of these legacy organizations. That's less money for someone with actual ideas that aren't cancel culture is going to kill us all. because, like, it's every 3 days. This is what they're talking about. Is this or trans teenagers using the bathroom?
This piece is so long. Holy shit.
Yeah, I would say give it a read if you're in a good mood and you want to ruin that. Or if you've just been drinking. It's pretty funny. Like, it's one of those pieces that Barb Kay sort of tells on herself, and that she has, like, no actual ideas in her head. They gave her too much space. She talks herself into a corner in it. Did you guys read anything good this week, though?
I read a couple of good things. Firstly, ProPublica has a very interesting piece out called What Parler Saw During the Attack on the Capitol. Some reporters at ProPublica archived all the videos from Parler of the storming of the U.S. Capitol and then put them together chronologically. And so that's a really interesting piece of journalism. I haven't watched all of it, but like, I've watched enough where it's kind of cool. You can see like different angles as it's going on, and it tells you what time everything is at, or at least what time it was posted to Parler. So I'd recommend that. I also just started reading a piece in Harper's about Terry Glavin's favorite military formation except for the IDF, called the Azov Battalion. Which is a Ukrainian neo-Nazi military formation written by a guy named Aris Rusinos, and that's in Harper's Magazine. That's in their January issue, so check it out on newsstands.
It's crazy that Terry Glavin would love that. It's absolutely shocking.
There's lots of talks, especially like in Alberta, about teachers, you know, organizing and healthcare workers organizing and what that looks like and how that's done. And a lot of people are saying things like, you know, General Strike 2021 just a hashtag on Twitter, or like, why are these teachers not striking? And a lot of that is because to build to a strike is very difficult. So I'm going to recommend that if you are interested in how to get to that, you read anything that you can about, or any article. There's a lot of Jacobin articles about it, about the 2019 general teacher strike in LA, and how that is basically a masterclass in how to do a mass organization. They had 100% of their staff strike, or 99, I can't remember, and they won everything that they wanted to in the negotiations. So go read about the general LA, the 2019 LA teacher strike, and we can start building power based on how we've won in the past on things like that.
Awesome. And Marino, did you have anything that you wanted to recommend this week?
Yes, I read something that was good that I can recommend to people that I found went against the grain. The title is "The Race for a COVID-19 Vaccine Wasn't About Humanity, It's About Imperialism." It's a common piece in the Globe and Mail, written by Akanksha Singh. Anyways, I saw some old white boomers fucking like,
so you know it's good.
On Facebook. So I knew that kind of dynamic, like how the heck did this get in my Globe and Mail this morning, would meant like a quality piece. And she talks about strategies for like reducing, or at least recognizing and reducing, the structures that undergird these sort of like global health races, and how there are winners and losers, and maybe things shouldn't.
That's weird.
Like that. It's a good piece.
I was told that Canada hoarding all these vaccines is actually good because we're giving the leftovers to impoverished countries. Eric, did you read anything?
Yeah, the Barbara Kay piece.
Oh, which, by the way, I finished counting. It is almost 4,000 words.
Yeah, and it's just...
Holy and it's like, shit.
Do you expect me to read that?
Like, yeah.
Fine, I'll read 500 words about Jessica Mulrooney being canceled. I'll read 1,000 words. I'll read 1,500 on a good day. But, I mean... You expect me to read, and then you have the audacity to screech on Twitter about how no one's following up on your powerful scoop. It's like, learn to write, you old hag.
But also, like, have real ideas. The best part of this piece, and I feel like you have to like look at it in a different lens than you would a normal column written by like a serious person that deserves your attention. It's like watching a movie like Most Valuable Primate, which of course we all know is a movie about a chimpanzee that learns how to play ice hockey and becomes the most valuable player on the team. And then they're like, a chimpanzee can't play hockey. And they're like, just watch him. And it's terrible.
Whoa, spoiler alert.
Well, he's a great hockey player, but it's a terrible movie.
Sorry, if you haven't seen Most Valuable Primate, I would suggest you stop listening now.
I would be shocked if our listeners didn't watch that several times a week. Like, you have to get into a particular mindset to watch a terrible movie and enjoy it. That's the same thing with Barbara Kay's column. You have to know that this is a dumb, dumb column written by a really stupid person who thinks that they're right. And that makes it enjoyable. So read it, please. Please. And then tell her how much you hate it.
We are not linking to that in the show notes. We're doing you a favor. Just
please,
yeah.
Please read it and then tell her son and her how bad it is, because she'll really appreciate it, I think.
No, but I think you should not read it and tell her and her son how bad it is, so they can be like, did you actually read the story? And you can just be like, no, why the fuck would I do that?
No.
All right. Well, you know what? I miss doing the podcast. I miss the bonus episode with Abdul. This was a whole lot of fun for me. Lainey, thank you so much for joining us for another episode.
Thanks again. Thanks again for having me.
Bye.
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 It's Big Shiny Takes, the only anti-free speech podcast. Big Shiny Takes, reading garbage for your brain. It's Big Shiny Takes with Jeremy, Eric, and Marino. Big Shiny Takes are sure to entertain. Are sure to entertain.